husband divorced for any cause. Divorced for any cause. Somewhat ironic, I guess, that I'm preaching on divorce today after preaching a wedding yesterday. I think sometimes people enter into marriage with unrealistic expectations of what's going to happen, and that causes a lot of people then to become very unsatisfied with their marriage, and does lead to a lot of the problems that we have in our society with that. Other people, on the other hand, have never learned to make a decision and stick to it. And so because of that, they pick somebody for a while, and then they get tired of them and want somebody else, and they won't stick to the decision that they've made. They're wishy-washy. I'm reminded of the story that's told about a bride who was about to get married, and she was trying to remember. She didn't want to look at the audience, because if she knew, if she looked at everybody else sitting out there, she would just probably pass out faint. So she didn't want to do that because she was so nervous. So she said, she was telling herself, what I need to do is I'll just keep my eyes on the aisle as I'm walking down, and I won't see anybody then on either side sitting in the pews there. And then I'll look up and I'll see the altar there at the front. And then after I see that, then I'll see my groom, and I'll look at him, and that way I won't ever have to see that there are other people out there. So I'll just keep it. And so as she was standing in the back, she thought, I'd say, okay, I'll on the aisle, and then I'm going to look at the altar, and then I'm going to look at him. And she kept repeating this to herself. And then, so everyone in the church building, as she was walking down, kept hearing her mumbling under her breath, I'll alter him. I'll alter him. Well, that's, I think, one of the things, too, that a lot of people think will happen after they get married, and it's not true. You're not going to alter somebody. Whatever you married is what you got. If you couldn't change them before you got married, you're not going to change them after you get married. So forget about it. Hopefully, the young couple that I married yesterday, they seem to be a very sweet and loving couple. I know they've been dating for quite some time and have been preparing. One of the only wedding that I've performed where they actually wrote their own vows. They were serious about this thing. They knew what they wanted to say to each other, and they knew what they were getting into as well. Divorce for any cause. In America, 1 in 3 marriages end in divorce. 1 in 3. Some are saying it's now getting closer to 1 in 2. Now that alarms a lot of people. They say, well, I don't even want to get married. We've got to realize, too, that many of these divorces are folks that have been married 6 or 7 times. Other statistics that is probably a little more encouraging to some would be the fact that over 80% of heterosexual couples are still married to their first mate. But that means the other 20% have been married a whole bunch of times. But that's what happens, isn't it? Those that get married and stick together for life. And those that don't stick together wind up bouncing from one to the other, and you hear about people that have been married 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. Most states now allow a no-fault divorce, where they can say, no, nobody was at fault, there's no problem, we just can't get along anymore. We just don't want to be married anymore. No fault. Well, if there's no fault, what's the purpose of not staying together? If there's nothing wrong, they'll say, don't fix what's not broke. Why would they be getting a divorce if there's not some fault? They believe there is some fault. They're just not willing to perhaps air their dirty laundry before a court. Even the church is being caught up in the movement to allow divorce for any cause. And some people claim that that is what we should do. The Gospels record Jesus teaching more about divorce than baptism. That might surprise you, but there are far more passages accepted. That lets me know that this must be something he thought pretty important, or he wouldn't have talked about it so much. I want to look then at three things this morning. Or at least statement, let's examine. First of all, let's examine marriage and divorce in the Old Testament. A lot of people are still trying to go by that Old Testament teaching. The guidelines our country uses for who can be married comes from the law of Moses. Now, those are changing. In America, we know in Massachusetts they just said it's okay for homosexuals to get married. That certainly didn't come from the law of Moses. But most of the traditional laws about who can and can't be married were from the law of Moses, from Moses' law. Leviticus 18, verses 6 through 18, tells what sexual relationships were not proper. And that's the kind of thing that they base our laws upon. It says beginning in verse 6, none of you shall approach any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. The nakedness of thy father or the nakedness of thy mother shalt thou not uncover. She is thy mother, thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. The nakedness of thy father's wife shalt thou not uncover. It is thy father's nakedness. The nakedness of thy sister. Verse 10 says, the nakedness of thy son's daughter. That would be your granddaughter. Verse 11 says, the nakedness of thy father's wife's daughter. That would be your stepsister. That's another cover. Verse 12 says, the nakedness of thy father's sister. That's your aunt. 13 says, your mother's sister. That's also your aunt. Verse 14 says, your father's brother or his wife. Even your uncle's wife, even though she's not blood kin, she's still your aunt, it says. Verse 15 says, not your daughter-in-law. She's your son's wife. And he says, verse 16, your brother's wife, that's your sister-in-law. And of course, the same would be true of a woman and the man from the other side. Also not uncovering the nakedness of a woman and her daughter. Neither shall I take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter. And then he says, you shall not take a wife and her sister. Some of those laws, that's why our country, we have laws against incest, and there are certain marriages that just aren't, you know, you can't marry your brother, your sister, your cousin, or some of these things, uncles, aunts, you can't marry those people. It seems somewhat odd, I guess you could say, that they're allowing now homosexuality, but they're still against those things that seem, while I guess you could say it would be bad. I don't think it's nearly as bad as what they're allowing. But that's the basic gist of who was allowed to have sexual relationships, and that, of course, then would allow who could and couldn't become married. Under the Old Testament law, priests could not marry a divorced woman. They had to take, they couldn't marry a widowed woman either. They had to take a virgin. She had to be one who had never known a man. Verse 21 through 7 says, thou shalt not take a wife that is a whore or profane, neither shall they take a woman put away from her husband, for he is holy unto God. The priest was set apart for God, and there were more specific rules regarding what he could marry than everybody else. We saw those laws earlier. Those in Leviticus, those certainly apply, but there were even more specific laws for priests. Well, in the New Testament, we are the priesthood of God. We are a holy priesthood, all of us who are Christians. And so, we need to think about marriage. It's a very personal and a very close relationship. We need to think about that marriage and who is a proper mate. And then we see third in the Old Testament that divorce was allowed, notice that word allowed, in cases of uncleanness. Cases of uncleanness. Now notice then Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he hath found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement, and give it in her hand, and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her, and write her a bill of divorcement, and giveth it in her hand, and sendeth her out of his house, or if the latter husband died, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. After that she is defiled, for that is abomination before the Lord, and thou shalt not cause the land to sin, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance. This is the passage that the Pharisees are going to be asking Jesus about in Matthew chapter 19. We'll see that in a little bit. But this is the passage that was in question. Notice a couple of things in this. First of all, the word uncleanness means nakedness and clearly refers to sexual misconduct. It doesn't mean she didn't bathe often enough. Doesn't mean she didn't wash her hair. Doesn't mean she didn't keep a clean house. It refers to her nakedness. In other words, he's found some sexual uncleanness in her. He's found out perhaps that she's a prostitute, or that she's been with someone else, or is having an affair. This is what it's referring to. But by Jesus' time, anything a man didn't like was considered uncleanness. But she burnt the toast, so she's unclean. I'm going to write her a bill of divorce and send her out. Moses said I could. Now the Pharisees, you have to remember, the Pharisees were very strict about uncleanness. They thought about, anything that made them ceremonially unclean. And a woman, every month during her regular cycle, she became unclean for a period of time. Maybe she's unclean, so I can divorce her now. So in other words, they were saying, no matter, just whatever I want to come up with, she's unclean, I'll get rid of her, is what they were doing by the time Jesus came along. Now notice one other thing in this passage, that once she had been divorced and had remarried, she could never again return to that first husband. And I've heard make that argument today, that once a woman has been divorced and she goes and if she has married somebody, she can never go back to that first husband. We must remember, we are no longer under the old law. We're not under the old law. In fact, what the New Testament law teaches is that if a wife is departed from her husband, or separated from her husband, she is to reconcile to him. That's what the New Testament teaches us, that she is supposed to go back to that first husband, if it is possible. Now, it may be the case that he would not take her back, and then she's to remain unmarried, if that's the case. So now we come to the question, and let's examine marriage and divorce as Jesus taught it. What did Jesus say? What did Jesus teach? Matthew 5, 31-32, and 19, 3-12, Mark 10, 2-12, and Luke 16, 18, all record Jesus' teaching on divorce. We won't read all of those right now, but those all make reference to divorce, marriage and divorce. I want to notice that what Jesus says is different from the old law. It's very important. He didn't just say, what we learned in the old law, that's what we're going to keep. No, that's not what he said. Some people have tried to make all sorts of things out of Jesus' teaching. We're going to look at some of those things in a minute. But we're going to look at what he actually said himself. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 31, he says, it has been said, this is what the old law says, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. We read that. Deuteronomy 24. That's what it said. That's what's been said. Notice verse 32. He says, but I say unto you. So what he's fixing to say is different than what the old law said. It's not the same thing. He says that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. Whoever shall marry her that is divorced committed adultery. So he makes it clear that what I'm saying is different than what has been being taught in the past. Then we turn to Matthew chapter 19, verses 3-12, which gives the most detail of his teaching. It's the largest section of his teaching. And what does he teach in those sections? First of all, that marriage is one man and one very clearly in verses 4 and 5. Notice what he said. And he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? There's our first clue. Male and female. And said, verse 5, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife. And they twain, that means the two of them, shall be one flesh. Now he makes it very clear there are only supposed to be two human beings involved in a marriage relationship. And they're supposed to be one a man, and the other the wife, a woman, male and female. Not a man and a cow, not a man and another man, not a man and three wives. It's a male and female, a man and a woman. Now, this is one of those things that our modern society is trying to redefine. They're trying like crazy to redefine it, and are succeeding in some areas. But that's the relationship, two human beings. Now, there is a third party involved in marriage, and that's God. God joins them together. In verse 6, he says, what therefore God has joined together. So when a couple, a man and a woman, come together to be married, God joins them. Regardless of what the marriage certificate and license says, it's not the state that joins people in marriage. Now we have to abide by the laws of the nation we live in, as far as becoming married. But that's not who joins you. It's not the preacher that stands up in the front, I now pronounce you husband and wife. That doesn't necessarily make it so. It's God that does the joining. God decides who's married and who's not. And I think that's one of the greatest confusions that people have about marriage and divorce and remarriage, is they say, well, I got a divorce. It's a state I went through. I went to court and got the divorce, and I got remarried, so everything's okay, isn't it? Not necessarily. God's the one that decides when a marriage starts, and he's the one that decides when a marriage ends. And so we're going to have to look at what he has to say about it. Okay, so then we see the second thing that Jesus taught, that marriage should never end. Verse 6. It should never end. He says that in verse 6. Wherefore there are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. In other words, don't let man separate it. It's not supposed to ever end. It's supposed to be till death. Don't let any man separate till death do us part is one of the lines in many weddings. It should never end. But number three, Jesus does say, fornication is the only acceptable reason for divorce that allows remarriage. In verses 8 and 9. So Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. Notice what he said, he suffered you, in other words, he allowed you. The Pharisees had said, why did Moses command us to put away our wives? They made it sound like that's what they were supposed to do. You get married for a while and then you have to put your wife away and give her a wedding before. No, Moses didn't command them to do it. He allowed them to do it. Jesus said the reason he allowed that was because of the hardness of their heart. But from the beginning it wasn't that way, and it's not supposed to be that way. And then he goes on to say in verse 9, and I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication. So there he gives the only allowable reason to get a divorce and then to be able to remarry. And shall marry another commits adultery, and whoever marries her that's put away does commit adultery. So notice he said, now a lot of people say that, they say, well, okay, a lot of people get the adultery and the fornication confused there. They say that the adultery is what the reason that God gives, that Jesus gives for divorce. That's fornication. Under the Old Testament law and under Jesus' law as well, if a man marries a woman thinking, or a woman marries a man thinking, that they have entered into a pure relationship with that person, later to find out that person is not pure and was not pure, they find out that person has committed fornication. Now, sometimes people enter into that knowing ahead of time. Now, you may have, not you may have, and they know. These two individuals, they're not virgins. But in cases of deception, there could be cases, as wild as things are now, where you could have a man who marries a woman only to find out she's not really a woman. Find out she was really a man and she had a sex change. There's all sorts of scary things that can happen in today's society. They said fornication is the reason that's allowable for divorce and leaves that innocent party free to remarry. He says that whoso marries her which is put away, somebody is put away for fornication, and then somebody goes and marries her, that person commits adultery. If there's a divorce where fornication was not involved, either of those two parties who remarry are committing adultery. Then we see that any other divorce and remarriage means the new couple is committing adultery in verse 9. And then Jesus also teaches here that it is good for some to never marry. His disciples say, well, Lord, if that's the law that you're giving us on this, then it's better not to get married. And he says, well, you're right. There's some people who can handle that, but some can't. He said, if those that can handle not getting married, good for them. But that's not a law. But it is good. In fact, better for some never to marry than it is to become involved in a relationship like that that is not right. And then he talks about the fact that there are some that are born eunuchs, some that are made eunuchs by people, and others who have become eunuchs for the kingdom's sake. It says, he that is able to receive it, let him receive it. And that's what Paul teaches as well. If you can remain single like I have, then good for you. So much the better. But it's not a law that someone has to remain unmarried. Marriage is honorable, the Hebrew writer tells us. Okay, third then, let's examine marriage and divorce as people today teach it. Because people have greatly departed from what Jesus taught here in Matthew 19 as well as in Mark and Luke as well. First of all, some people say, Jesus' teaching was the old law. They say, since it was before the cross, before Christ's death, what he was teaching was under the Old Testament law and we're not bound by it. Well, if that be the case, everything that Jesus taught in the New Testament, we need to throw out the window. You want to do that? They don't either. They may say that, but you get right down to it. They don't want to throw out everything that Jesus said. Jesus is the one that said, do unto others as you have them do unto you. That's not in one of the letters to the churches written by the apostles after Christ's death. That's what Jesus said before he died. Jesus talked about the coming kingdom. He talked about the church. He told us how to handle problems with our brethren. If you have a problem with your brother, take it to him. If you won't listen, take it with him. If you still won't listen, take it to the church. He was talking about what he was going to have as part of his new law. He wasn't. Now there are times where he clarifies for the Jews their Old Testament teaching, and some people say, well, see, that's what's going on here. He's just telling them what they should have been doing. No, he's making it very clear. We see this in the second one. People then say sometimes, well, Jesus didn't mean everyone. Jesus was just talking about Christians. Or he was just talking about Jews. No, Jesus makes that very clear. In verse number 9, he says, and I say unto you, whosoever. He doesn't say whatever Christian or whatever Jew. He says whosoever. That means anybody and everybody. The teaching that he has applies to everyone. And then some will say, well, baptism washes the past away. And when we're baptized, we're forgiven of all our past sin. That's true, we are forgiven of all our past sin. But they distort something slightly. One of the things that's involved in having those sins washed away at baptism is repentance. We cannot repent and continue living in that sin. Let's imagine, if we will, someone who's robbed a bank. That person's robbed a bank, and they come and they say, I want to become a Christian. I'm willing to repent of my sin. Now, repentance involves, where it's possible, restoration. That's not always possible to get restoration. If you kill somebody, they're dead. You can't restore that. You can just stop and you'll never do it again. And then you may, express your remorse for that, and you wind up going to jail and serving your time for that crime that you committed. But you can never restore that. On the other hand, someone who's robbed a bank has that money there, they got it stashed away, and then they come to hell and be a Christian. And so they're baptized, and it washes all their sins away, so they can keep that money and spend it, right? We know better than that. We know if they repent of that sin of robbing that bank, you got to get that money back. If I've stolen your car, and then I say, oh, go become a Christian, that washes my sins away, I'm going to keep driving your car? And there's nothing here. No! I've got to give your car back. And so people say, well, you know, yes, I know they shouldn't have gotten married, but they got married, and they didn't have any right to scripturally, but that's okay, because then they became Christians, and now he can keep that wife. No! It's that other man's wife that he's got. He can't keep her. And she can't keep that husband that belongs to another woman. It can't happen that way. Baptism washes away the sin. But if they continue to live in that marriage that's not approved by God, each and every time that they are together, they continue to commit adultery. Every time that they come together, they will commit adultery. And then some people say, well, Jesus' teaching that he gives is the ideal. That's perfection. But God knows that we can't do that, that we can't reach perfection, and so it's okay that we don't really follow that, because God understands that we can't do that. Well, let's start applying that to everything. Boy, Christianity would get real easy if we start, well, I know that God said not to lie, but that's okay, he knows I can't do that, so I'll lie whenever I want to. God said, you know, don't murder, but he knows I can't do that, so I'll kill just a few times whenever it's just too much for me to keep from it. Oh, come on. Yes, it is the ideal. That's what all of Jesus' teachings are, the ideal. He's teaching us what's right. But we can't justify doing wrong just because, well, it's too hard to do what's right. Notice, and then some people try to say, well, that's just not what Jesus meant. Jesus wasn't trying to make this the law. Well, the disciples then were pretty confused. Because after he teaches this about marriage and fornication being the only cause for divorce that allows someone to remarry, what did the disciples say to him? They say, we know you don't really mean that. Listen. No, they say, if that's the case, it's better not to get married. They said, Jesus, the law that you're making here is hard. That's a hard law to follow. To not be able to, you know, they were living in a society like ours where everybody divorced and remarried two or three times and it was no big deal. And they said, Jesus, you're making a hard law here. If what you're saying is the law, then it'd be better off if we just didn't get married. And what did Jesus say? Oh, no, no, I didn't mean to make it sound that hard. Y'all know I'm doing like you're doing? No, that's not what he said. What he says when they make that statement, In verse 10, his disciples said, if the case of the man be so with his wife, it is not good to marry. It is better to not get married. And then notice what Jesus said. He said unto them, all men can't receive this same thing to whom it's given. They said, it's good just not to get married. He said, well, you're right, but not everybody can handle that. Some people have to get married. Paul put it this way, it's better to marry than to burn. If somebody can't control themselves sexually, then they need to be in that marriage relationship. Now, once they've ruined that, then they've gotten themselves into a very, very difficult situation where they can't marry, and yet they have those sexual desires that have no lawful place to fulfill. That's a difficult situation. But we should be surprised. We shouldn't be surprised, rather, that Jesus says these things. Many of the things that Jesus said were hard. But we've got to understand, Christianity is a serious thing. Our soul is at stake. And if I have to do some things that are hard in order to save my soul, then that's what I need to do. Jesus said, if your right hand offends you, cut it off and cast it from you. If you're having trouble because you're married to somebody that you don't need to be married to, or you're about to become married to somebody, just sit tall, but stop it. Don't do it. Quit before you get yourself into a situation, but know what you're heading for before then. That's why we need to so strongly, as we talked about last week, teach these young people how to find a good mate the first time around, because that's the only chance you got. How to find that the right one, the first time, and be able to find somebody that's going to feel the same way about sticking to it and marriage being till death do you part that you do. The person that's going to believe that marriage involves faithfulness, one woman, one man to each other, and not running around on each other. We've got to understand what Jesus is teaching here. Yes, it's a hard saying. He had a lot of hard sayings. And yet he expected us to obey his commandments. If we love him, we will. We must teach and practice what Jesus taught to please him. We can't use excuses. We can't use any of these other statements that men have made to try to discount what he said. We got to teach what he taught. Imagine, you know, he also said he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. Well, that's too hard. Why don't we just make it whoever believes and says they want to can be saved? If you just believe and say you want to be saved, then we can't change what Jesus said. And things don't just disappear. Sins, there are two kinds of sin. Some sins that are committed one time, and then repentance and forgiveness can follow. Other sins are continual way of life kind of sins, and that's what Jesus is talking about when he says, whosoever marries her commits adultery. You know, he keeps on committing adultery as long as he's with her. He's got some. That's what John the Baptist got his head chopped off for. He told Herod that it's not right for you to have your brother's wife. And he lost his head over it. That's just a hard thing. Let's think about another situation that might help us to understand the severity of this and the consequences of the actions that we take. So we talked about the idea that people have that baptism will just wash it away. Well, let's take a young woman who, and of course there's a young man involved too, but we'll focus on a young woman. But a young woman, young man, not married, she winds up pregnant. She realizes she's done wrong, she studies the Bible, learns the gospel, she decides she wants to become a Christian. She becomes a Christian. Washes away that sin, right? Sure. Does that mean she's not pregnant anymore? No. She's still pregnant. See, there are consequences to the sins that we commit that stick around even after the sin has been forgiven. See, God's not going to magically make that baby disappear just because she repented of being having sexual relations outside of marriage. It's not going to happen that way. And yet people want so badly for it too. I can sympathize. I agree with the disciples. Jesus teaching on divorce and remarriage, it's hard. I don't like it. I wish he said, you know, yeah, just let it be however. That'd be nice. But that's not what he said. And we can't make it what he said. We have to do what he said. There are a lot of things that Jesus taught that I wish he taught it a different way. I wish he'd made it simpler and easier for us. But he taught what was right and what was true. But we need to understand also, in conclusion, the individuals involved must decide if they are following God's command. I've known too many times where a preacher or other member in the church was telling somebody else whether they could or couldn't be married, whether their marriage, whether there was fornication or adultery in their marriage or what. We don't know all the details of somebody else's marriage unless they tell us, and even then we generally get one side of the story. The people involved in those things, they're the ones that are going to have to stand before God. Now, that means if they admit, oh, we're not supposed to be married because we studied this and we know we didn't, you know, there was no reason for me to divorce my first wife. She hadn't done anything wrong, but then I went and married this one, and I know I'm living in sin. I know I'm living in adultery, but I don't care. Then we have a place to act. But as long as we got to come across the marriage covenant, they said, yes, I was married before, but I had a scriptural reason for my divorce. We're not the judge. We're not the jury. They're going to have to stand before God and give answer to that. We teach them what Jesus taught. They have to make the decision as to whether what they've done in their lives fits with what Jesus did. Now, some people are lying to themselves. There are a lot of people saying, oh yeah, I had a spiritual reason to be divorced and remarried, and it's okay. And they're going to be surprised when they get the day of judgment. Because they didn't. And God never dissolved that first marriage. They're still bound to that first husband or that first wife. Some people are going to be surprised. But our duty is to teach what the gospel says and to teach what Jesus taught. To practice it in our lives and to make sure that no one knowingly continues to violate that unpunished, unconcerned about the consequences. And we've had situations in this congregation of this very thing. There are some couple, well, not a lot of people that have been remarried. We have to take their word for it. If they say they're in the right relationship and that their previous marriage ended for the reasons Jesus gave, we take their word for it. Now, if they come around later and say, well, you know, I was wrong, you know, I was not, then that's when our elders have the right and the duty and responsibility to practice church discipline on those individuals who know they're living in sin but refuse to change. So we need to be careful, because I have heard of preachers and elders and leaders in the church that do have gotten themselves into all sorts of things because they decided they knew better than the people involved whether that marriage was right or not. We need to be honest with ourselves. You can fool men, but you can't fool God. You can fool yourself into believing it, but you can't fool God. If you're here this morning and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we